And it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming, welcoming Jessica Neufeld and Susie Pierce. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Hi, David.
We're going to be talking about The Half-Life of Marie Curie, a two-person show with Jessica playing Marie Curie and Susie playing her friend, Hertha Ayrton, a scientist. This is a play coming to the region quite soon with a very new company, Afterglow Theater Company. First off, is the formation or declaration of this company, is this simply to be able to produce shows outside the realm of the many theater groups in the area? Or will this have more of a focus? Certain types of shows are the goal for the company.
I wanted to start a company to do shows that are possibly seen as a little more edgy, a little more provocative. Being on the board, I can say this, we do have free rein in a lot of ways to do whatever shows we want, but we have to think about what does this community want, rather than one woman sitting there going, well, I think what this community needs is this thing. And I'm drawn to shows that really beg the questions that a lot of people are maybe a little more uncomfortable to answer, or definitely there's that fear of asking those sorts of questions. I want to do a certain type of show that is not always the most, let's say, crowd-pleasing per se, or it might not have the title that a lot of people know, or it might be much more obscure. But I really go with my gut when I'm reading a show, and when there is something there that a lot of the time I can't define it in the moment other than this is a feeling of this feels important. And if something feels important, I have almost an inability not to say what is important. And sometimes people take offense at that. Sometimes people are like, well, why couldn't you have just kept that to yourself? Or is this really the time and the place to say a certain thing? And for me, I feel that importance bubbling. No, it's not the sausages. It's actually maybe inspiration, or it's just this really innate feeling that I have about how important this work is. And Half-Life of Marie Curie, when I was reading it, there was something in that very first monologue and the moving into Marie's monologue that follows Hertha Ayrton's, my character, going into that, I was hooked. I was sucked in at these two women at a time when things were very volatile for women, especially in the field of science, and coming from science people, I felt like this is important. This needs to be said.
Okay, well, Jessica, you're about to leave the area, but you're a part of the formation of this company. It's not quite a hot potato, hand it off and then go. But you've been a part of forming companies in the past, and Susie was wanting to. And so it's as really as simple as that. You're helping the process along.
So Susie, we met at Stell Coffee. I don't know if that's okay to say.
Yeah, you can do it.
Whatever. And I think we had read a couple of plays or a couple different scenes over the past year of us getting to know each other, because we met last summer in 2023. And then I was doing Hay Fever at Footlighters, and we met up, and Susie was like, I've got this play. And the way that I've produced in the past when I've done it on my own is usually it's a play that either hits right away or it's something that's been gnawing at me for a while. Like the first show I produced, I think it gnawed at me for about 6 months. And I remember saying this, I think it was 2021, somewhere in there. And I was like, oh, it's too painful not to do it. And I have no idea how to produce. So that seems less scary, though, than not producing. We read it. We read the first scene. And I think similar to Susie, I was like, do you want to do And then Susie said yes, and then a couple more conversations, and I applied for the rights, and then the rest is history up to this point. So there have been several times in the past that I have set out to make a theater company, to find a home, to get people together. I was living on a ranch in Shadow Hills area in Los Angeles, and I had kind of given up theater, and I was just working with horses and kids with intellectual and physical disabilities. And so I was like trying to carve a new career path because I just was like so burnt out on acting. And I was in my late 20s, but I kept wanting to do play readings. So I did a ton of play readings with a bunch of different people who are a part of this other theater group that I was a part of, but not running. Mm. But nothing got enough traction either, like in my heart or with other people or whatever. So I feel like in the past, when I have set out to try to create something, it's motivated by the desire to create like an empire, not to just do a show. And so every time, honestly, that I have produced, it's been because I want to do this play. Gotcha. And I don't want to wait for somebody else to be doing it. I don't want to go audition for it. I don't want to like pitch it around. I have just found in this industry is like, if you want to do it, strike while the iron's hot inside of you and find a way to get it done. So for me, when it comes to producing, that's a little bit more of the route that I take. That's not exactly sustainable for creating right. a company and working with people and being able to consistently bring people into the fold for audiences. It's like, oh yeah, the last thing you produced was 12 years ago. Like nobody right. cares about you anymore. Yeah. So I would think that working with somebody like Susie, who is very vision driven, mm-hmm. Sorry, Susie, I'm going to speak a little out of pocket about some things. Like, nothing offensive.
You go. When you need to say it, it's important. Say it.
I was just thinking, like, with you being a bit more of the visionary with the company, and then I feel like I'm, like, a bit of the engine in the moment. Mm. And at least for this dynamic, I think it works well because I don't have to worry about that big picture. I can just worry about the big picture of this play and then the details.
This will be performed at Redlands Footlighters on Barton Road, but it's not actually part of their season. Was this just a dark spot on their calendar, an available weekend with very little set construction? How did this come into their fold?
Well, we were trying to figure out where we might want to put this show on. We were toying with LA. We were toying with this area, Riverside. But my heart always brought me back to Footlighters. It's my home theater. I'm a member of the board, but I do know that when we choose a season, we try very, very hard to create a thoughtful season, one that's going to make sense, one that's going to not just please the audience in the way that this was entertaining, this was fun, I'm going to leave the theater feeling really good about myself. So we're very thoughtful about our season, but I really feel very connected with this community, this side of things here in the Inland Empire. The other board members, they're not just board members. These are my friends and my colleagues in this community art world. So I felt that it's something that they would appreciate as a board, a message, a piece of art that can resonate with the community that we are so connected with, while also a little more than gently push them to think beyond their comfort zone. It's not a forceful push, but it's not just this gentle nudge. It does really ask the audience to turn the mirror on themselves and reflect on their own journey through life and what their friendships are and their connections. And I just feel like that's such a wonderful thing to bring home. And there's this thing about home, the way that I feel about my own home, the way I feel about the places where I feel more at home, and where do you bring the most important things? Well, I feel like that is really the place. And then sharing it with people that come to visit you in your home. Even though I myself and Jessica with Afterglow were a visitor at Redlands Footlighters, I still have the audience, our community in mind with that. So I just felt like it was going to be a really cool place that I felt would appreciate the message, but it's not part of the regular season. So if there is anyone that's like, hey, this was really off brand for Footlighters to choose to do, well, yeah, well, and this is why, because Susie can be a little off the rails a little bit. What's maybe the most popular thing or something that's gentler. And then they can get to know me better as an artist, but while I'm still in this very comfortable home. And I got to tell you, David, Footlighters is a super cool space. Let's just talk about what it is. It's not the most conventional looking theater. Mm-hmm. It does seat a lot of people. It's got a lot of just neat stuff going for it, just the way the building is, the opportunities for production and things like that. So besides this very heartfelt reason for it, it's just a really great space to work in.
So let's talk about the show itself. The Half-Life of Marie Curie by Lauren Gunderson. This follows or shows the friendship of the well-known Marie Curie and the severely lesser-known Hertha Ayrton. Can you round this out a little bit more, whether it's a plot-driven show or if it's more sort of a glimpse into the day in the life of kind of thing? This is looking at their friendship. Tell us a little bit more about what we'll be seeing or experiencing when we go there.
It's kind of a microscope of a very brief period of time in both of these women's lives, kind of told through the memory lens of Marie Curie. Like I said, that might sound a little bit confusing. You'll have to see the show to kind of understand what I mean by that. But it takes place really over the span of 10 years, I think.
Mm.
But the first 92% of the show takes place in the summer of 1912.
The perfect summer.
Yes. And then it kind of goes into a few of their accomplishments and kind of what happened with World War One and some of the other inventions that these two women brought to the World War and sort of the outcome of that for their lives and their relationship ultimately. So it is a bit of a microscopic look at this one summer and what happened to Marie and how Hertha was there. And I was listening to an interview with Lauren Gunderson, Kate Mulgrew, and Francesca Fardani. Kate Mulgrew and Francesca were the original Hertha Ayrton and Marie Curie, and Lauren Gunderson obviously is the playwright. And they were talking that the entire play was constructed from the letters that these women were writing to each other and journal entries. And so most of this is pretty true to fact as far as, you know, what we can narrativize together. So this is not like some fan fiction, but it's actually brought forth from the writings of Hertha and Marie and their relationship. Just taking like that one moment in time and kind of like putting a fisheye lens on it and blowing it up, and then probably taking some narrative license. But the interactions that they have about being women and mothers, widows, scientists, it's so interesting that Marie is known for being a scientist, but we don't talk about Marie the mother, Marie the wife, Marie the widow, Marie the alleged lover. I mean, I don't know if we have to say alleged anymore, but it's looking at these women as very full figures, which is just seems like so counterintuitive that to even talk about women that way. Like, we have to make sure to not be reductive, which I just find so irritating, and I'm doing it right now.
Thank you.
I just think it's really interesting to be able to just very simply look at the script and it's just conversations, not like in the boring talking head way. There's a simplicity, I think, to the interaction, even though they can be talking about deep things. But there doesn't feel like from Gunderson a need to like prove how clever she is as a playwright or like, show everybody how smart these women are. I think that that comes out in the characterization and the things that they don't say at times.
Mm. Were these two women actually working together, or were they on paths which intersected at times?
They were two fairly different scientists in that they did not work together.
Okay.
They met because, well, Hertha's husband knew Marie first, and then he introduced Hertha and Marie. Hertha was an electromechanical engineer, and Marie was a physicist and chemist. And Marie, of course, worked with radium and then polonium. So she worked on the radioactive side, where Hertha, her big contribution that we talk about a lot in the play is her book on the electromechanics of arc lighting, how she redesigned the light bulb so that it doesn't make this hideous, horrible sound that drove everyone mad. And although Marie was getting her hands dirty shoveling uranium ore in her early days, Hertha was looking at light bulbs going, why the hell is it making this noise? What is going on here? And then she figured it out and she redesigned it. She wrote a book on it. And then she wrote a treatise on fluid dynamics, which is all about the mechanics, the physics of waves, not just in the sand and not just in the water, but also in the air. So, yeah, they were two completely different scientists, but their intellectual contribution, the contributions that they made, of course, in the lab and their inventions, they were equally as driven within these women.
Gotcha. Before I forget, there is a bit of adult language in this, yes? Or are we just skirting around the fact that Hertha cussed like a sailor?
Well, I mean, okay, there are two F-bombs, okay, which I would argue are very well deserved.
Okay.
And then some GDs.
I say S-H-I-T a couple of times. Let's say it's a sprinkling of some adult language in there, because Hertha was, our director, Michael Yavnieli, he said this, she's like a sledgehammer to the head, to a lot of people.
That's right.
And so sledgehammers, I think if a sledgehammer could talk, I think a sledgehammer might have some cuss words in there.
Okay.
So does Hertha.
I'm David Fleming in conversation with Jessica Neufeld and Susie Pierce, on stage quite soon in Redlands in The Half-Life of Marie Curie. You touched on this, I think it was when you were talking about the opening monologue, that part that just got you. Okay, some argue that for some shows, as far as any process or method, nothing is required. Okay, it's all in the words. And I happen to disagree with that, by the way. But that said, give me an example of some lines which really speak to the quality or nature of these people that we're seeing on stage, either the characters or both the characters, whether your own or something that you noticed about the other one. While they're giving the line, you're going, oh, my God, that's deep.
Well, I will say, I'm going to talk about your poem, because I actually had a little revelation about that poem.
So Jessica is going to be talking about one of Susie's.
Yes.
Okay.
So this takes place earlier on in the play, and Marie is not in a good place. And I think Marie experiences a feeling that we've all had before, where it's like, please stop trying to bright side things. Like, I'm not cheering up kind of thing. But Hertha has this very beautiful poem that has a lot of deep meaning for her. I won't go into that, Susie. But I realized the other day when I think we were rehearsing and I was listening to you, and as Jessica, I think the poem is beautiful, but then I realize, like, I don't think Marie cares about this poem at all. Just with some of the character stuff with her, it's on a different level than, maybe it's not that she can't comprehend, but it's on an emotional level that she can't access at the moment because it's too painful. And I think it was the other day when you were reading it that hit me, just because following lines of Marie's are very resistant to it. But this poem is just quite gorgeous and simple and profoundly deep, and goes to the heart of some of Hertha's vulnerability. Like, how precious to tell somebody a poem when the other person is like, I don't really like poetry. And you're like, this poem gave me my name. It helped me to realize who I am, to search for my place in the world. These are all phrases and ideas that Hertha has thrown out there about this particular poem, and it has this very interesting place in the play, and there are lines from it that are repeated up until the very end moments, or at least alluded to. Sorry to steal the thunder of the most profound thing in the play. But yeah, I wanted to speak on that from this other little discovery I just made the other day, Susie.
Nice.
I'm going to piggyback on that, Jessica, because not that it's the one where I read it and I was like, this is it. This is the play I want to do. The beginning of the play, it grabs you with that monologue, and I couldn't stop reading it. And so I think that's the first indicator for me where I'm like, I need to see the progress here. I need to know what happens. And it grabbed me, and that pulled me through. And I think if you come and see the play, you'll know what I mean, because the first two monologues, they grab you and they don't let go till the end. But this poem, I teach English to freshmen, and most of them don't really care about English. They're there because they have to be there. But I try to instill in them that fiction, art, is absolutely necessary for us in our own personal growth. It's not just about what is absolutely necessary or what is going to make us money or what is it that is right in front of me and I can touch it. What are the things that really make us self-reflect? What makes us think about ourselves? What makes us feel something? And Hertha responds to Marie after Marie, because Hertha talks about how this poem shook her, or that Hertha, this is the, when I read it, I said, oh my God, this is the secret truth to the universe. And Marie goes, that sounds like physics. And Hertha says, I think it all comes from the same spring. And I go, you know, that is so true. And I feel like most of us gather information, we gather ideas about ourselves and other people through their art or through other people's art, and then we can then self-reflect. And that's what this play really, really does. And it even addresses it, however briefly, in that moment, it addresses that importance that I think that I personally find it so important that anything I see or anything that I read, when it truly lands for me, it's because it has more or less forced me to look at myself and how I treat others. And that's exactly what happens in that scene. So I would have to say, Jessica, I'm right there. If I had to pinpoint a moment that is the most powerful in terms of art and literature and things like that, it would be right there.
That's a great way of getting to people, at least to come to the show, if not for the first monologue.
I know. We keep going on about those opening monologues.
We're going to have to be super good. Oh, my God.
That's going to have something to follow that. How do you? Oh, gosh. Okay. Now, sort of in the same lines, any parts of this that we can talk about, which is all subtext? The moments that the audience is able to witness something that you, the actors, discovered this, not because it was in the dialogue or the stage manager's notes or whatever. Moments like this.
Oh my gosh. This play is a lot of subtext. I'll just speak for Marie and I'll let you speak for her that.
Sure.
So Marie, in my reading about her, she has been historically described as, demure is not the word, but it is the word that keeps coming to mind. Modest, not demonstrative. I want to come up with like other adjectives for like shy or reserved, but those words have never been used when I was looking for personality traits and reading about her. But like modesty and being non-demonstrative were the consistent things I kept seeing when reading about how other people regarded her as a person.
That come from humility or just...
We've talked about this with the director, Michael. So she is Polish and moved to France when she was in her mid-late teens to pursue education at the Sorbonne. And so coming from Poland in the late 1800s, being born and just sort of looking at, you know, sort of a gross character overview of Eastern Europeans, and this, of course, is like a massive generalization, but use generalizations to start somewhere when building a character. Mm-hmm. And so sure. Looking at the way that her lines are structured and her word choice and the word order, which as an actor is something I always look at first to be like, what does this person's voice sound like? And as we've been rehearsing, this, at least to my ears, this much more monotone, a little bit heavier back in the throat, in the chest voice is coming forward. And I'm using a French accent, so that is definitely placed further back in the throat and then more on the lips. So it's like, I'm not going to do it right now. But everything about the way that she speaks physiologically is reserved. And then that with the Abbott and Costello of Hertha, who is this huge, boisterous, emotional, you know, like she's wailing. With all of that information, I think that there a lot until towards the end when she kind of releases the pain of the circumstance of her world right now. And they get wildly drunk in one scene. And then I think that's the first only scene where we see Marie be a little bit more loquacious and not even like curious about what she's feeling, but just open, I guess is the easiest way to put it. In most of the other scenes, she's battling, keeping it together. She's in a lot of pain. And so I do think that there's just most of the play for her is subtext and what she's deciding not to say. And then therefore the words that can come out, which don't really communicate much apart from everything's fine.
So we're hopefully seeing, I mean, a lot of processing before the actual words are coming out. That's really cool. For the theater geek, that's something to watch for. And for the audience member, that's something to appreciate because it adds realism. We don't just come out with what we're saying. It forms and then it comes out or just falls out, in my case. But, well, Susie, tell us about Hertha then, as far as any subtextual discoveries that aren't just right there in the line.
Well, Hertha is much more upfront, and we've had this conversation several times during rehearsal with our director, I have a tendency toward playing characters that are more maternal, that are warm, like, come here, hug me, all right, let's talk, what's going on?
Okay.
But then we have Hertha, and Michael really, just with the discussions and the work that we've done with him, I just got to shout out to him that he's given me some stuff that I was like, that is a cooler choice than what I was thinking here. And it makes more sense with Hertha. Hertha, being an electromechanical engineer, being this sort of a freight train going full blast a lot of the time, it's a matter of I'm going to say it and I'm going to move, but I'm also going to notice little things. And it comes out where Hertha is noticing things about Marie, but she's not saying anything about that thing yet. It does get said later, but there are these things that she's noticing that are very subtle that I didn't consider until Michael was like, hey, you know, maybe this is a good point for you to actually kind of notice this thing. So there's those little subtleties. Subtextually, I've got to say what I'm really trying to grasp is the idea that we are widows. We are on this ship that's meant only for men, this ship of science that really is, and it was at the time. And I think there's still times now where it's very male dominated and women really aren't welcome. They're openly not welcome into that world. And I think that's really her fuel, that fire in the coals there, that I don't have my husband, even though she never relied on him, but there was always, I feel like with Hertha, it's a safety net in a way. And then once she's by herself after her husband died, well, she is all by herself. And I have to continually remember that. And I think that's where a lot of her strength now has led her. And this is where Marie isn't as seasoned as a widow. Yeah, it's been a while that she's been a widow, but she's not as seasoned. William's been gone much longer than Pierre has. So I think it's these women truly alone without this male presence in the science world with them that could ease the inequity of that.
For this edition of KVC Arts, I've been speaking with Jessica Neufeld and Susie Pierce, playing Marie Curie and Hertha Ayrton, respectively, in The Half-Life of Marie Curie at Redlands Footlighters Theater, produced through Afterglow Theater Company. That's November 1st through the 10th, Fridays through Sundays. Afterglow Theater Company is on Instagram at Afterglow Company Theater, changing it slightly for the acronym ACT or ACT. It's also Afterglow Company Theater on Facebook, and a website is coming quite soon. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Jessica and Susie, and here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Zach Mays, Sandy Hodela, and Shireen Awad. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts. Beyond Us Now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Go to kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.